Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to 9 Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Globalization Trap: Reclaiming American Prosperity by Michael Collins is a policy-oriented nonfiction book about the economic costs of globalization for the United States, especially for manufacturing workers and the middle class. Drawing on Collins' broader writing on manufacturing and trade, the book argues that the standard promise of free trade, lower prices, higher productivity, and rising living standards has not been evenly realized. Its central concern is the hollowing out of domestic industrial capacity through outsourcing, persistent trade deficits, and the transfer of production knowledge to foreign competitors. Rather than treating globalization as entirely harmful or entirely beneficial, the book focuses on how trade rules, corporate incentives, and national policy choices shaped outcomes. Its purpose is practical: to outline a path for rebuilding American manufacturing, protecting critical technologies, restoring wage growth, and creating a more stable economic foundation through targeted tariffs, tax credits, quotas, enforcement of trade laws, and workforce training. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, free trade promises versus the lived reality of industrial decline. A central topic in the globalization trap is the gap between the conventional case for free trade and the experience of many American workers. The book challenges the assumption that open markets automatically raise wages and living standards for all participants. Collins does not appear to deny that globalization can lower consumer prices, expand markets, and help developing countries attract capital and technology. His concern is that these aggregate benefits can conceal severe regional and occupational losses in the United States. When factories close or production moves offshore, communities lose not only jobs, but also suppliers, technical skills, apprenticeships, and local purchasing power. The economic damage is therefore broader than a single plant shutdown. The book frames deindustrialization as the result of policy choices that favored multinational efficiency over domestic resilience. This makes the argument different from a simple anti-trade position. Collins focuses on whether the rules of global competition have been fair, whether American workers were realistically protected, and whether the promised transition to better jobs was adequately supported. The issue is not trade in the abstract, but a trade regime that allowed industrial capability and middle-class bargaining power to erode without a coherent replacement strategy. Secondly, rebuilding manufacturing as an economic stability strategy. The book treats manufacturing as more than one sector among many. Collins presents it as a foundation for wage growth, technological capability, supply chain strength, and middle-class stability. The reasoning is that manufacturing creates dense networks of value production workers, engineers, toolmakers, logistics providers, maintenance firms, and local suppliers all depend on an active industrial base. When manufacturing migrates offshore, the country may still consume finished products, but it loses the practical knowledge embedded in making them. That knowledge is difficult to recover once skilled workers retire, supplier networks disappear, and capital investment moves elsewhere. The book, therefore, emphasizes rebuilding domestic production capacity rather than relying solely on service sector expansion. This does not mean every lost factory job can or should be recreated exactly as it was. The more realistic argument is that strategic manufacturing capacity matters for national prosperity because it anchors higher productivity work and supports innovation. Collins positions manufacturing renewal as a deliberate policy goal, not a nostalgic preference. The topic also connects economic security with social stability. If broad regions lose access to well-paid production work, political frustration and inequality deepen. Manufacturing policy, in this framework, becomes part of a broader effort to rebuild a durable middle class. Thirdly, trade deficits and the need for targeted economic intervention. Another important topic is the book's focus on trade deficits as a signal of structural imbalance. Collins links persistent deficits to the loss of domestic production, the import dependence of key industries, and the weakening of bargaining power for American workers. The book does not present market forces as self-correcting in a simple way. Instead, it argues that when other countries use industrial policies, subsidies, currency practices, or barriers to protect their own producers, a purely hands-off American approach can produce one-sided results. For this reason, Collins discusses targeted tools such as tariffs, tax credits, quotas, and stricter enforcement of trade laws. The emphasis on targeting is important. The book is not primarily an argument for indiscriminate protectionism. It is a case for using policy to correct unfair competition and rebuild sectors considered strategically important. This creates a pragmatic framework to identify where domestic capability has been damaged, where foreign competition is distorted, and where policy can encourage investment without isolating the country from trade. The strength of this topic is that it connects trade balances to real production decisions, A deficit is not only an accounting figure, in Collins' analysis, it reflects where factories, supply chains, skills, and future industrial power are located. Fourthly, protecting critical technologies from outsourcing and dependency. The globalization trap also highlights the danger of losing critical technologies through outsourcing, foreign production dependence, and the transfer of research and development advantages. Collins argues that a country can weaken its long-term competitiveness when it gives rivals access not only to finished products, but also to the know-how behind production. In manufacturing, technology is not limited to patents or laboratory discoveries. It includes process knowledge, tooling expertise, quality control methods, engineering judgment, supplier coordination, and the ability to scale production reliably. Once these capabilities shift abroad, domestic firms may become dependent on foreign suppliers, even for goods essential to economic resilience. The issue becomes especially serious in industries tied to defense, infrastructure, advanced machinery, communications, energy, or other strategic needs. The book's concern is that short-term corporate savings from offshore production can create long-term national vulnerabilities. Protecting technology, therefore, requires more than legal restrictions on intellectual property theft. It also requires maintaining domestic ecosystems where skilled workers, engineers, and firms continue to practice and improve production. Collins positions technology protection as a practical companion to manufacturing renewal. A country cannot fully control its economic future if it loses the industrial base needed to apply and defend its own innovations. Lastly, workforce training as the bridge between policy and wage growth. While the book criticizes outsourcing and trade policy, it also recognizes that rebuilding prosperity requires workers who can participate in modern production. Workforce training is presented as a necessary link between industrial strategy and actual wage growth. Tariffs, tax credits, quotas, and trade enforcement may encourage domestic investment. But those tools will not produce broad gains if companies cannot find skilled employees or if displaced workers cannot move into new roles. Collins' focus on training reflects a practical understanding of manufacturing as a changing field. Modern factories often require technical literacy, machine operation, quality systems, maintenance skills, computer-aided processes, and continuous learning. The book, therefore, points toward workforce programs that respond to real industrial needs rather than generic retraining promises. This theme also addresses a weakness in earlier globalization arguments. Workers were often told that they would transition to better jobs, but the institutions needed to make that transition credible were frequently underdeveloped. Collins treats training not as a substitute for industrial policy, but as part of it. The goal is to connect domestic production, skill formation, and higher wages in a mutually reinforcing cycle. In that sense, workforce development becomes both an economic policy and a response to the social damage caused by deindustrialization. In conclusion, The Globalization Trap is best suited for readers interested in American manufacturing, trade policy, middle-class decline, and practical responses to deindustrialization. Policymakers, business leaders, economists, labor advocates, and informed citizens are likely to find it useful because it connects broad economic debates to concrete industrial consequences. And its practical benefit is that it moves beyond diagnosing globalization as either good or bad. It asks which policies produced unequal outcomes, which capabilities the United States must retain, and what tools might help restore a stronger production base. Intellectually, the book encourages readers to think about trade through institutions, incentives, supply chains, and national capacity rather than through abstract efficiency alone. Compared with many books in the globalization category, its distinguishing feature is its manufacturing-centered perspective. Collins writes from a background closely associated with industrial experience, so the emphasis falls on factories, skills, technology transfer, trade enforcement, and wage-producing production rather than only on macroeconomic theory or geopolitical commentary. The book stands out because it combines criticism of free trade orthodoxy with a policy roadmap that includes tariffs, tax credits, quotas, workforce training, and technology protection. Readers seeking a balanced defense of unrestricted globalization may find it less aligned with their assumptions. But those looking for a clear argument about how to rebuild American productive capacity will find its focus direct and relevant. If you would like to support Michael Collins, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.